present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Sale and Altrincham Messenger.
Rookery Hall Hotel requires a chef pâtissier, wine waiter and a deputy dead receptionist.
Well, thank you to L.M. O'Brien of Timperley in Cheshire for spotting that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you please welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and journalist and broadcaster Matthew Paris. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran with Roy Hattersley. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from Dog World.
Zoe, a mongrel bitch carried unconscious from a smoke-filled house in Bournemouth, was revived by fireman Tony Birch, who gave her the kiss of life. His action has won him an RSPCA award, and Zoe has since had six puppies.
Well, thank you to Mrs. M. Ferris from Hythe in Kent for sending us that little winner. Richard, here's your first question. Who changed his tune of regret?
I changed my tune of regret too, incidentally, because the first time in my life, I voted Lib Dem.
Really?
In the Newbury by-election, yes. Old Lamont turned up and started to sing this French song, Je ne regrette rien.
Now known as the Little Sparrow of the Conservative Party.
There speaks the old crow of the Labour Party.
And he was then put on the spot a bit, and he said he didn't regret singing Je ne regrette rien, or saying it, but he regretted lots of other things, such as the fact that he'd never got to be Prime Minister, etc.
This was Norman Lamont, who went before Edinburgh Conservatives to plead that he should be judged on his record. So after fairly examining the evidence, they immediately sponsored a bill to bring back hanging. Mr. Lamont finished his speech by saying, I expect to be unpopular and I expect to be criticised. Wrong-footing everyone with his pinpoint accuracy. Matthew, welcome back to the show. Who waved the white flag in the class war?
This is the one test that all the trade unions, all the opposition members of Parliament and many of his own side wanted John Paton to take. They wanted him to do a little bit of reading aloud in front of an unruly class, and then answering difficult questions from the other side. He took the test and he climbed down as he was required to do. This was John Paton's climb down on schools testing.
Absolutely right.
Very good.
It's this week's Education Secretary, John Paton, who announced a government U-turn over classroom tests. The Education Secretary, or as he's known, Knitting Paton, stitch one test policy, drop one test policy. Promised sweeping changes next year. Yes, he'll be doing the cleaning. If all this wasn't enough, John Major's given Paton his full backing. Talk about kicking a man when he's down. Roy, your question now. Why might we be going to the supermarket for a restructured hospital? Your question?
Oh, that's because a supermarket chain, the name of which just temporarily escaped me, is bidding for hospital contracts. That gets me the point, so I don't have to remember that it's Tesco.
Right.
Yes, according to a report that came out this week, though, it seems elements of the public have taken the supermarket analogy in the wrong way as far as hospitals are concerned.
Yes, that's right. But we come to that a bit later on, unfortunately. Virginia Bottomley hopes to mirror the success of America's Spleen You Like chain. Under the scheme, the Marks and Spencer patient will be entitled to a full exchange if that new organ just isn't me. Any man risking the Tesco ward could find himself on a wonky trolley while a girl at the checkout shouts, how much of vasectomies, Maureen? Alan, as usual, your first question is preceded by some music.
Listen, do you want to know a secret? Do you promise not to tell? Whisper in your ear. Say the words I love to hear.
Well, that was, of course, Do You Want to Know a Secret by Billy J. Kramer and the Dakotas. And the question is, who's been making a fly on the wall with a bug on the air?
Well, everybody says it isn't MI5. Apparently, one of these potted plants that Charles talks to all the time has blown the whistle to your authorities. He and the next queen, but one, were having a bit of an up-and-downer on their premises. And this news has got out. It's come to the attention of the Sun. And it's deeply upsetting, though not to me.
The Daily Telegraph has explained why they did it. The Daily Telegraph says that MI5 thinks it's necessary to bug these conversations because they suspect it's possible that there may be someone at the palace who is unstable.
Sergeant, just pick up the noise. It might be someone going through a cocktail cabinet. Do you have to phone the Sun, or is it my turn? You had to do, when you were Home Secretary, you had to deal with all these mad buggers.
He was never Home
he
Secretary.
He never was.
You're just
he
saying never Home Secretary. I never was.
Well, it's just that... Yes, you were Home Secretary.
No,
I know you were Home Secretary.
Yeah. If I'd been Home Secretary, I would have remembered.
How do you think we're all here today?
Not judging by recent evidence.
What were you?
Can't remember now. It's so long ago.
No, you were Home Secretary. I don't pull this one. Oh,
I've got to confess it. I was the undercover Home Secretary.
Absolutely right. There's the allegations that MI5 have been bugging Charles and I, and it's only fair they've been bugging everyone else for years. The scores, unremarkably, at the end of the first round are all square at 4-4. We start round two with an item from the Worcester Journal.
Situated in a sought-after area of Great Malvern, a magnificent stone-faced gentleman's residence.
Richard, your question again. Who got out of jail, collected £5 million and put on golden handcuffs?
So many of these people around nowadays. It's not the chap here who went to Cyprus, is it?
No.
Well, that was the Lord Chief Justice. No, it was one of the Guinness chaps.
That's right.
Who was a convicted crook like so many people nowadays. Didn't seem to be held against him. And he went back into the City of London and is now running some very big business.
The deal was about this £1.7 million that they sheared off his pension so that they could, to help him pay his fine. It was a sort of lease back of money. So he'll only get about £3 million a year when he retires, won't he, boy?
Speaking of the former Home Secretary, I'm not at all sure about this.
This is the Heron Corporation, which is insolvent with debts of £1.4 billion, whose boss, Gerald Ronson, has been given £5 million to extend his contract. Ronson, one of the Guinness fraud gang, was also lent £1.7 million towards his fine and was let out of jail, having served only half his sentence. His partner in crime, Ernest Saunders, or Sundance, was likewise let out early with senile dementia, but made a miracle recovery after intensive treatment, consisting of a large gin and tonic in the limo as he drove away from Ford Prison. One lord for the rich, another for the poor.
Very true,
Matthew, why are hospitals at £500 million a steal? You answered this earlier, but please try again.
Elements of the public have been taking Virginia Bottomley's supermarket analogy with hospitals a little too literally, and a recent report has suggested that hospitals are like supermarkets without tills. You walk in and you take out the bandages, the pillows, the blankets, or whatever you want.
That's absolutely right. Items stolen include a wheelchair, which still had the patient in it. He was gone 3 days before anyone noticed. But at least it passed the time until the doctor was ready to see him. And Roy, here's your piece of music. Way Down by Elvis Presley. And your question is, what's gone down less profitably than usual?
What's gone down less profitably than usual? Sir.
It's BT, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Sir.
It is.
The BT profits have gone down. I can't remember quite why. What excuse are they giving, Matthew? Do you know about this?
They haven't sacked enough people yet, but they promised to try.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
They're only making £62 billion a minute now.
Yeah. Yes, that's more or less it. It's the news that British Telecom's profits went down last year by an average of £30 a second or £48 a second in peak time. Chairman Ian Vallance said that there were definite signs of an improvement in performance, largely as a result of jubilant subscribers ringing each other up to say, "Have you heard the good news about BT's profits?" Alan, your question now. What army orders are now Morocco-bound?
Oh, yes, we know.
Trousers?
We know.
We will be stretching it a bit.
Yes, we know.
Former
Deputy. Let the Home Secretary answer.
Former Secretary. The Army is no longer buying its trousers from a company in the West Country, Devon Cornwall Light Infantry, down there. They're buying them from Morocco because they're cheaper. This is an enormous security risk, because if we ever go to war with Morocco, the army won't have any trousers to fight it. But they've nevertheless done it.
Well done.
I carry you, you know.
I carry
you.
Well, you'd have made a bloody good Home Secretary, I think. With an answer like that, terrific.
Absolutely.
This is the sad news that J. Compton's Sons and Webb, suppliers of khaki trousers to the British Army, are to lose the order. For over a century, their trousers have kept the British Army sergeants' legs cool in summer and their privates warm in winter. We can't say fairer than that. Oh, and we've come to the end of a second round. Good grief. And the scores have taken an amazing turn because Alan and Roy have scored 6, but Richard and Matthew are in the lead with 9. We start round 3 with an item from the Southern Evening Echo.
Tomorrow, another warm day with spells of hazy sunshine, some lasting overnight.
Well, thank you, Mr. Arwood of Brightstone, Isle of Wight, for passing that cutting on to us. And Richard, your question again. Who lacked focus after the eyes didn't have it?
Is it to do with this amazing new development in the cricket, game of cricket?
No, that comes next. This...
Some strange paranormal means of doing
it. No. This is to do with...
People with hats.
I must pass it across to the other side.
This is Her Majesty.
It's right.
Oh, yes.
It's a tragic story of Her Majesty.
Too late now.
Very unfair.
Who not only had to pay income tax, but had to open one of her lovely homes to pay for the damage done to her other lovely home. She actually can only afford one pair of spectacles.
No, MI5 had stolen her spectacles.
Those with spectacles know her problem, but she's got all these homes. She keeps thinking, well, I left them on the draining board at Balmoral. No, it wasn't. I put them in the anorak in Sandringham while I was worming the cat. It wasn't while I was reading Sporting Life in the bath at Windsor Castle. Anyway, just one pair of glasses. And she turned up somewhere, well, with the Greek, and she was in her handbag, and throw out all these various odds and sods and half-eaten sandwiches and things, and she could not find her goggles. And she passed it to the Greek, who then read it impeccably.
Hush, hush, whisper who dares. The heir to the throne has just fallen downstairs. This is Her Majesty the Queen, you know, the married one, who was unable... who was, as Alan so rightly says... unable to deliver a speech because she'd forgotten her glasses. Luckily, Prince Philip was on hand to step into his wife's shoes and her pearls and twin sets. He said he hadn't had so much fun since he left the Navy. Meanwhile, the Queen is said to be taking advice from her sister. When Princess Margaret forgets her glasses, she simply drinks straight from the bottle. Matthew, a piece of music for you now. Well, that was I Can't Stand the Rain, and Matthew, your question is, why is rain down for the count?
Oh, the trouble is I don't read these stories. It's one of these love-at-first-sight things.
And
somebody called rain as... fallen in love with somebody else. As soon as I see these things in the newspapers, I just turn the page over and don't read them anymore. But there is somebody with the name R.A.I. any. I don't know who she or he is. Do you know, Richard?
This is the daughter of Dame Barbara Cutland.
Was that what it is?
And this whole story was written by Dame Barbara.
It is alleged.
It isn't true at all. She made up this wonderful story about this beautiful widow who met this dashing, beautiful French count, is he?
Yes.
Le Comte de some... The silly count is my... And the story was printed in the Daily Telegraph, and everybody believed it to be true.
But is it interesting? Someone has fallen in love with somebody.
Oh, yes, but that's what makes the world go round, Matthew.
Is it?
I know if you're jaundiced.
63 years old, and he goes like a tram, I think. As Barbara Carton would say, I think it's fascinating. Glued to my paper for days. She got four names, only two husbands. She keeps turning up other things like Mrs. Gerald Darkness and Arthur Legg.
Well, I liked it best when she was Rain Legg. Ed Sheeran used to say it like, sounds like an Indian disease. I'm afraid she's suffering from Rain Legg. He had to shoot her. Is Rain Spencer, who announced she is to marry Count Jean-François de Chambon. The fortunate French aristocrat will get Barbara Cartland as his mother-in-law, Princess Diana as a stepdaughter, and with a bit of luck should just avoid having Charles as a son-in-law. Lady Spencer is known as Acid Rain. Her mother is known as Acid Indigestion. Described her fiancé as being just like a character of one of Dame Barbara's novels, which means there'll be plenty of romance and flowers, plenty of this, plenty of that, but not much of the other.
She could get her own back on the Queen by not asking her, too.
Good. Well, failing to invite her.
Yes.
Yes, exactly.
I bet that's occurred to the old bat.
Roy, what just isn't cricket anymore?
Oh, it's Lords, where those strange old gentlemen run the game. And because they don't trust umpires' judgment, they now have, or they're experimenting with, a third umpire in the pavilion. And what's more, they're so revolutionising the game that they're beginning to call Lords the Oval, where the experiment is actually taking place. Do you follow my drift?
Yes. Yes, Home Secretary, and... the changes sweeping English cricket, which include brightly coloured kit, introduced on the premise that as we play like clowns, we might as well start dressing like them. The bright new look was well received by spectators at Lord's, who greeted the pale blue-coated umpire with a chorus of, "You can't get quicker than a quick fit fitter." Meanwhile, the second innovation, the all-seeing third umpire equipped with a television, didn't work out. He was unable to adjudicate while standing on a filing cabinet with the aerial trying to get a decent picture. Alan, who went splash, splash for a record but didn't dare pull the plug out?
It's about a bloke who went round the world in a bucket. Called Timothy. I mean, I don't know what the bloke was called. The bucket was called Timothy. He went round the world in a bucket. That's about it, really.
It is, really, when you come back.
It was 5 feet long. That's and it. They're going round in smaller and smaller things, aren't they? I mean, eventually they will really go round in an egg cup.
This is all about Tom McNally, who sailed the Atlantic in 86 days, not in a bucket, but in a bathtub boat. Tom's now looking out for a few gallons of baby oil to get rid of 86 days' worth of bath wrinkles. Failing that, he'll be splashed down with whitewash, put in a blonde wig, and given the job of Barbara Cartland's stunt double. And on that cheery note, here are the scores at the end of the third round. Richard and Matthew, 11. Alan and Roy, 11. And back here we go. Before we start the final round, we'd like to turn the tables on Pick of the Week, which featured an elderly lady in a programme called I Married a Stranger.
I was very ignorant. I knew nothing about sex. I had no yardstick to compare it with.
Speaks a lucky woman, however. Richard, here's your piece of music.
In the Bluebridge Mountains of Virginia, on the trail of the lonesome pine, in the pale moonshine, our hearts entwine, where she called her name,
and I carved mine on June, just like the mountains are blue, like the pine, I am lonesome for you.
Well, that was, of course, On the Trail of the Lonesome Pine, sung by Laurel and Hardy. Now your question, Richard. Where is the mountain far from lonesome?
Well, we think this is to do with... Matthew and I think this is a reference to Mrs. Bottomley.
Yes.
No, only because it referred to the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia.
Yes.
Oh, give him a bonus for that.
Actually, I think it refers to the Dame Barbara Cartland assault on Everest. She was to become the first 92-year-old woman to scale the world's highest mountain, along with hundreds of other people.
Did she get there in the end? Can you remember?
Dame Barbara. The lady.
Someone climbed this week without oxygen.
Yes.
How the hell did he breathe?
Yes. I think that was Dame Barbara.
Train at Kathmandu, take a deep breath and run like that. Just see Tom McNally dragging his bath up there. With this woman in it.
The stupidest thing ever was the Japanese who climbed all the way up to ski down it. It took him 4 weeks to get up there and 38 seconds to come. But this story refers to the 38 people who reached the top of Mount Everest on the same day and ensured the biggest climb down since John Patton's Education U-turn. Dodging the Sherpa timeshare touts, the victorious crowd celebrated their ascent by buying snacks and soft drinks from the summit ice cream van. Proprietor and Mr. S. Rushdie. The claim that the vast numbers at the summit was making it look too easy was denied by expedition leaders Bill Deeds and Sherpa Cartland. Matthew, who wasn't kidding when he went over the wall?
Oh, yes.
Now, Tibet Way still.
Yes. I thought he'd broken every bone in his body, but says he never broke any bones in any of his daredevil stunts. It was Eddie Kidd
who
jumped over the Great Wall of China in the presence of thousands and thousands.
Very good. Excellent answer.
Very good.
This refers to motorbike stuntman Eddie Kidd, who jumped over the Great Wall of China watched by 20,000 cheering Chinese, who were delighted to receive their first ever express pizza delivery. Roy, who went underground and took passengers for a ride?
Oh, yes. It happened, certainly happened in New York. And it happened to somebody whose initials are K&T. But I can't read your writing. It's very...
calls himself a Home Secretary.
So you call him a Home Secretary,
Alan. I call myself not a Home Secretary.
Didn't they do short down when you were Home Secretary? What Home Secretary of course did you go for? It's a man called Karen Thomas.
You expect me to know about a man called Karen Thomas?
A young man took a New York subway train, and they only discovered who it was because it arrived at the stations on time. And they said, "That's a bit odd." And then they took it away in handcuffs.
Where do you learn about all this?
It's in all the papers.
The newspapers?
The newspapers. Those are the ones. Yes, you read those, and it gives you the stories. It's a wonderful system they've come up with quite recently.
It's his Oxford education that teaches him all this, you know.
It's teenage rail fanatic Karen Thomas who posed as a driver and took passengers for a 45-mile journey through a New York subway. Commuters first became suspicious when the wayward youth, or as he's now known, Thomas the Crank Engine, delivered intelligible passenger announcements and made all his stops on time. A similar incident couldn't happen here, as we don't allow underqualified incompetence to run anything apart from the Treasury. Now, Alan, having done so well with Roy's question, here's yours. Who wasn't put off by failing to measure up to the law?
I think Matthew knows this.
We don't know who, but we just think you don't know who, and we think you ought to say
so. I saw the one about the bloke who had size 22 boots and has got £260 grant from the Sports Federation.
Yes, no, it's not him.
He's not him? No, it wouldn't be, would it, if it's too small? He wouldn't be 4'8" with size 22 shoes. Like little tits, you can make a fortune on.
This was Andrew McKenzie, whose application to join the police was rejected on the grounds that he was too short. But short of two what, they didn't say. Not to be put off, Andrew stuck a flashing blue light on his Ford Escort and went on patrol to clamp down on dodgy drivers. Unfortunately, the first one he stopped turned out to be a real policeman who promptly arrested him. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team have brought along. Richard, what cuttings have you brought along?
This is a touching letter, Barry, from an oldie in a well-known magazine that caught my eye. It says, I'm one of those dumped here to die. I'm fed and watered and kept clean and told that I'll be seldom seen. As the years drag slowly by, each night I pray that I will die. But still I live. I wonder why. I didn't want to end this way. I'm waiting now for Deliverance Day. P.S. Who'd be without the Radio Times?
Appropriate from the editor of the Oldie. Now, Matthew, what have you brought us?
It's from the Glasgow Herald. A Glasgow woman who was getting married requested that instead of having the wedding march played as she went down the aisle, she'd like the Bryan Adams romantic song Everything I Do For You from the hit film Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Unfortunately, the last-minute replacement organist misunderstood the request and instead played Robin Hood, Robin Hood, Riding Thief.
Roy, do you have a cutting for us?
I do have a cutting. It's from the Exeter Express, an echo, absolutely essential reading to anyone who appears on this programme. It says a woman jockey had to be airlifted to hospital after she was knocked unconscious when she fell from her horse at Holden Racecourse near Exeter. She was rushed to the Royal Devon and Exeter Hospital, where staff described her condition as stable.
That's right, well worth a groan there. Alan.
I have a gobbet, Barry, from the Minneapolis Tribune and Star. It's Cheeseman, found guilty on 28 counts of aggravated robbery, felonious assault, assault with a deadly weapon, armed robbery and attempted murder, was sentenced to a consecutive total of 190 years. As he left the court, he called across to Judge Willard, "What do you reckon, Your Honour, should I sell my car?"
Very good. Thank you all. It's been great fun. Let me give you the scores at the end of the contest. Alan and Roy have scored a noble 13, but Richard and Matthew have trumped them by a, well, even better deserved 16. This week's winners. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Draper's Record, which has been sent to us by Gina Mann of Tunbridge Wells.
Playtex is busy planning to build on the Wonderbra range. Managing Director Brian Duffy said, "We're very excited about building on the Wonderbra trademark. We've got a lot of very interesting ideas which are still bouncing around."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Roy Hattersley MP and Matthew Paris. The chairman was Barry Took and the cuttings were read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Louise Coates.